There were three things that I was looking for coming into Dynamite tonight, coming out of Double or Nothing this past Sunday. The three most important things. Number one was addressing the TNT title situation, which unfortunately has led us to a point where, not surprisingly, we have a vacancy when it comes to the TNT title. If you saw Double or Nothing this past weekend, you saw Adam Copeland defend the title against Malakai Black in a barbed wire steel cage match. During that match, Adam Copeland climbed to the top of a very tall cage and decided to dive off the top onto Malakai Black, except as he dove off, he panicked, had a change of heart, came straight down on his legs, on his ankles, and he broke his leg. Now, why he hesitated, maybe he realized this was a terrible idea, maybe he realized, oh shit, I wrapped this man in barbed wire, I don't want to disembowel myself if I splash him on the way down. Whatever it was that was going through the man's head, unfortunately, he is going to be out for quite some time. Now, he finished the match, but he does have a broken leg, and so I wanted to see tonight, how are they going to address this title situation? Because I have been saying now for the longest time that all roads lead to Adam Copeland dropping the TNT title to Jack Perry. Jack Perry was brought back. He is part of the Elite. The Elite have the Continental title. The Elite have the tag team titles. And it only made sense that Jack Perry would be next in line and Copeland would put him over, one of the pillars, one of the young stars on the AEW roster for that TNT title. He will not have that opportunity now. But tonight, the Elite came out, and they were all set to bestow upon Jack Perry, to hand him over, like Eric Bischoff, handing the World Heavyweight title out of a briefcase over to Triple H many years ago, hand him the TNT title. When Christopher Daniels reemerged, the same Christopher Daniels who was fired unceremoniously only a few weeks ago on TV by the Elite, and given his severance. Well, as it turned out, he is not fired. He is now the surrogate for one Tony Khan. And I'm here to say that that is a wonderful idea because it gets Tony Khan off television and it gives somebody else the chance to do the talking for him, which is honestly the best solution. If you want to communicate things from Tony Khan on television, you have somebody else who can actually speak on television do so on his behalf. So that was a great decision that they made here on this show to not have Tony Khan be the one to come out and do the talking. But what we're going to have is a ladder match at Forbidden Door. All roads lead to the UBS Arena. It's going to be a ladder match. Qualifying matches will take place on television starting this Friday on Friday Night Dynamite, according to Christopher Daniels, who had one job. Rampage, but they're going to have qualifying matches. That is how they are going to crown a brand new TNT champion. Yeah, the thing about the Copeland thing that really is sad, and it's too bad, is that he would have been on the Wembley Stadium card this year. You know, when he debuted last year, it was a couple months after the Wembley show, so he wasn't able to be a part of that show. And he won't be a part of the show this year, at least not in a match. I mean, maybe he can make an appearance, but that's got to suck for him, you know, the fact that he will not be able to have a match on that show, but that's what happens when, unfortunately, you make dumb decisions, things like this happen, and I knew it as soon as I saw him limping at the end of that match on Sunday. I said, that's it. I thought it was a knee injury. Turned out to be a fractured tibia. Although I noticed on TV tonight, Excalibur mentioned a fractured ankle, so I'm not sure if that's an update or he just misspoke. Maybe he broke both. I'm surprised he didn't break both his legs, to be honest with you. But it's a lesson learned not to do stupid stuff like that. I wish him well. So that answered question number one. The other question that they had to address on the show tonight that I was watching for: who is going to be set up as the next challenger for Swerve Strickland and the AEW World Championship? We already knew coming in they were doing a casino gauntlet match. They were going to crown a number one contender for Forbidden Door. Who is that person going to be? Now, my fear, I say fear because it's not the match I wanted to see, but we had Hiroshi Tanahashi make a surprise appearance on Collision on Saturday. He was there in Vegas on Sunday. He has challenged for the AEW World title, or interim title in the AEW World title, each of the past 2 years at Forbidden Door, first against Jon Moxley and then against MJF. And I said, well, Tanahashi's in town. Tanahashi holds a win last year on TV over Swerve Strickland. Are they going to give us Tanahashi for the third straight year? I hope not. I don't need to see that. Thankfully, we did not get that. And what we ended up getting was such a surprise. I can sit here now and tell you that my early prediction for the Owen Hart tournament, the Owen Hart Foundation tournament, is already out the window. Because when Tony Khan and Martha Hart announced this year's Owens for the men's and women's on Sunday, I said Will Ospreay, Mariah May. Those are my early predictions. Those are the favorites right there. Mariah May for the women, Will Ospreay for the men. You do Ospreay and Swerve for the AEW World title in the main event of Wembley Stadium. That's the main event. That's what you do. Will Ospreay was in the gauntlet match tonight. Now, the last time we saw Will Ospreay in a casino gauntlet was the first time that we saw a casino gauntlet. Last month, the winner would go on to Double or Nothing to challenge for the international title. Will Ospreay won that gauntlet. Guess what? Will Ospreay is now 2-0 in gauntlet matches because he walked in tonight, the new international champion. He walked out international champion and number one contender for the AEW World Championship. He will now be challenging Swerve Strickland, not at Wembley, but on Long Island. And I say that as somebody who lived on Long Island for 4 years. Long Island, as compared to Wembley Stadium in London, England. But we're getting the match. And I'm surprised. I'm a little conflicted. I don't hate it. It's going to be a fucking fantastic match. I don't know that it will do Swerve any favors, necessarily, because Will Ospreay is the most over babyface outside of probably MJF in the entire company, or at least they're neck and neck. I mean, he's the guy. Swerve Strickland's still very popular, but if you put the two of them side by side and you gauge the crowd reaction, Will Ospreay is probably winning that contest. So now the question becomes, what's their plan for Wembley? Are they going to do Ospreay and Swerve in June and then run it back again in August and give us two matches instead of one? Is there going to be some kind of angle maybe that they shoot at Forbidden Door? You know, I don't know. What it has me wondering even is maybe MJF is going to be in the main event at Wembley Stadium. Maybe the match is Swerve and MJF. MJF looking to get the belt back that he got screwed out of back at World's End. I don't know where they're going to go with this. It was a shocking to me finish to that main event tonight because I was not expecting that to be the case, but it's hard to not sit here and be excited that we are getting that match because that is a huge match. And it's two baby faces going one-on-one. So the crowd reaction is going to be very interesting to see how much support Ospreay, if any, pulls away from Swerve as we get closer to the show. The thing I also liked about it is the fact that I had convinced myself that it's Forbidden Door season and the Tanahashi thing I mentioned. So we're going to get a non-AEW talent challenging Swerve for the title at a time when Swerve really needs an AEW feud. You know, he beat Christian Cage at Double or Nothing. They had a great match, but he's got to move on to something else that can play itself out on TV from week to week. And matching him up with a Tanahashi or a Shingo or somebody from another promotion doesn't do him any good. You know, it doesn't do this run any good. He's got to have some kind of story to really sink his teeth into. Well, he's going in there against an AEW talent, all right. He's going in there against one of the top talents in AEW. So that's going to be a lot of fun to follow, but I was shocked by the end of that match, and that main event was fucking wild. Everybody who came out, and they had surprises. They sprinkled some surprises in there. We had Mystico, and we had Shooter, Umino, and we had Ospreay was maybe the biggest surprise of all, to be honest with you. Leo Rush. We had all kinds of people. Jay White, which I was happy to see Jay White featured in a match like this. Hopefully now with Juice Robinson back, I would love it if they just had Juice kind of take his spot as one-third of the trio's champs and let Jay White go do his thing on his own in singles competition. So everybody who came out, it just kept building and building. And when Ospreay came out there, my God, the fucking Kia Forum, these people went nuts for this guy. If you want an example of how over he is, look at the reaction that he got when they hit his music in that match. So one thing after another, one person would come out, they would do crazy moves. Everybody was going nuts for it. It was a very fun main event, and we're going to get more into that. But there was a third question. There was a third question that had to be answered coming into the show tonight, which was, what is next for MJF? MJF has been gone since December. He made his surprise return on Sunday at Double or Nothing. He came out. He kicked Adam Cole in the dick. Seemingly, for now, moved on because Adam Cole is not ready to get back in the ring. Although he did take a bump, but he's not ready to get back in the ring yet. And so it looks like they're going to move on to something else for MJF in the meantime. What that is, we don't know. But he came out there and was very declarative in that, I'm not going anywhere. You know, he has the AEW logo tattooed now on his lower leg. He made it very clear that he is Mr. AEW. He's all in. Double or Nothing. And he's not going anywhere. So what is he going to do now? That's what I wanted to know. Unfortunately, that's the one question they did not answer on this show. I was very surprised to not see him on the show at all. I figured the reason they put his segment on the pay-per-view at all, instead of saving it for tonight, was to promote the fact that he's back and then get people to tune in to see him on Wednesday, and then he wasn't even on the show. Now, he was never advertised for the show, which was curious enough, but surprising to not see him on the card here. They are promoting him for next week, though. So they made it very clear that MJF will be back on Dynamite next week, and they've already teased his first opponent, because there was a very brief segment in the back later in the show where we had Roosh throw some words out, throw some fighting words out at MJF. I believe, in particular, what he said was that when you mess with the bull, you get the horns. That's what he said. You get the horns. So MJF and Roosh. It's going to be a very interesting match. When we get it, I don't know. Maybe Forbidden Door. Maybe that's the Forbidden Door match. But that was the one question of the three that we did not get answered on this show. We did, however, get the Dynamite in-ring debut of Mercedes Moné. You know, for a woman who signed with this company so many months ago and did nothing. They signed her, they debuted her, they did nothing with her. It took until Sunday to see her get back in the ring, 1 year, almost to the day, that she broke her ankle. And she had that great match with Willow Nightingale on Sunday, came back tonight here on Dynamite, back in the ring, already defending her TBS title. Can't hate on that. Here I was for weeks sitting here wondering, why is this woman not wrestling? I want to see her in the ring. Promos are not her strong suit. I don't want to see her doing promos. I don't want to see her doing commentary. I want to see her back in the ring. Well, we just had two matches of hers in less than a week with her first title defense here on this show. And I like that. I thought the first hour of this show tonight was actually pretty mediocre overall, but then things picked up. I really enjoyed that second hour. And on the whole, I enjoyed Dynamite. I thought it was a fun show. I had fun with the show. I didn't love everything that was on it, but it felt like there was a lot going on this show, a lot of different stories, a lot of different people making appearances. Chris Statlander, we got her first heel promo on this show. No Willow. Willow was not on the show. But there was a lot going on, and I had a lot of fun, especially with that main event. But on the whole, I had fun with this show tonight, and hopefully they can build on this for next week. But there's a lot of different things to get into, so let's not waste any more time here. This is your AEW Dynamite review. It is Wednesday, May 29th, 2024. I am the Solemn Monster. I mentioned Mercedes Moné. They kicked off the show with TBS Champion coming out for her TBS Championship celebration. They had balloons in the ring all over the mat. They had balloons that were tied to the ring posts. She comes out and she says, Wasn't it worth the wait? Wasn't I worth the wait? She said that, didn't I tell you that money changes everything? She said, we were here to celebrate the greatest of all time, her. And here I am thinking, oh, okay, sticking with the heel turn, right? Okay, that's good to know, right? That's the right role for her to be in. That's what it felt like here in the early going of this promo. She's out here putting over Willow Nightingale and putting over her match with her from Double or Nothing. They tore the house down on Sunday. She also said that Willow was too nice because even she could have seen, she being Mercedes, that Chris Statlander and that snake Stokely were going to screw her over. So she looks forward to Willow kicking their asses when she eventually comes back. Like I said, there was no Willow Nightingale on this show. And she was talking like the way she was talking here, it was like we might not see Willow for a while. But she's looking forward to when Willow comes back and Willow will kick their asses. She said, as the new face of TBS, she knows that she has a target on her back. And before that, before she can go on here, she was interrupted by Sky Blue up on the Tron. Sky Blue said that she had a surprise for her, and then they showed us highlights of the angle from many weeks ago. Now, this is an angle that you heard me mention, I think, during the Double or Nothing review. And I was waiting to see if Tony Khan was going to follow up on this. They did that sit-down interview with her and Alex Marvez last month. It was not good. And the lights went out, and we heard that there was some kind of commotion. And when the lights came back on, Mercedes was on the ground. Somebody had attacked her. We just don't know who. And we never found out who the mystery attacker was. So they show highlights of that segment, and then they cut back, live to Sky Blue on the screen. And she says, "That was some of my best work." And she says that she's only getting started. So as she said that, and she winked at Mercedes, Mercedes is in the ring telling her, "Come on, I'm waiting for you." And then in behind her sneaks in Sky Blue, and she attacks Mercedes from behind, hoists her up on her shoulders before dropping her with a TKO. And it ended with Sky Blue holding the TBS title in the air, heading up the ramp, and we had Mercedes glaring back up at her. At least they tied up the loose end. Is this the payoff that I was expecting? Is this the payoff I was hoping for? No. It was actually a very underwhelming payoff here, but we did at least tie up that loose end. I thought, again, this might go the way of the White Hummer in WCW, and it might just be forgotten about. So at least they put a period on that, and it actually led to a match that was made for later in the show. Look, if you think back to what was going on at that time, when that segment was shot, I thought the most predictable attacker, the most predictable name here, was going to be Julia Hart. Find out that Julia Hart attacked her. Well, Julia Hart is hurt, and she's out. Very long list of people who are hurt. Sky Blue is her minion. So this really was the most predictable outcome to this. It's not terribly surprising. It's just not exciting either. But we probably should have seen that one coming. So they went the predictable route. As the first challenger for the TBS title, I thought she's fine. I would have loved for it to be Chris Statlander, going in there as the, we find out she was the attacker. She ends up being the first, challenger for Mercedes. But the fact is, her program right now is with Willow Nightingale. The issue is between Willow and Statlander, not Statlander and anybody else. I think they could have done Statlander and Mercedes and then have Willow come back at that point and cost Statlander, for what she did to her. You could have done that, and that would have made sense too. But again, I get it. I get why they didn't want to go in that direction. But there's lots of talent in the AEW women's division for Mercedes to work with, people that she has and mostly hasn't worked with before. Because I'm sure at some point we're going to get Mercedes and Saraya, which we've seen, but not for many years. But there's a lot of talent in that division that Mercedes has never had the chance to work with before. Sky Blue is one of those people. Now, Sky Blue is not at the top of my list, and she may not be at the top of yours, but I do want to see her get in the ring with people like Sky Blue, people that we have never seen her work with before, and work with these people. That's the whole point of her coming to AEW, is to see her work with different people. So I don't mind it, but again, she's not somebody who would have been at the top of my list as a first opponent for Mercedes to go in there and beat. I don't see anything wrong with it. If anything, I'm more disappointed that it looked to me here like her heel run may be over. She was clearly being positioned as a heel and leaning into it. We had the contract signing a few weeks ago with her and Willow. And I was like, okay, good. That's the right role for her to be in. And then she starts this segment out talking about how she's the greatest of all time. And just the things that she says and the way that she carries herself in there just screams heel. But I'm not so sure now. I mean, now it feels like she might be back in the babyface spot. So I hope not. I really don't think that's the right spot for her to be in. But it looks like that may well be the case. If that is, that sucks, because that's not what I was hoping for. Now, earlier today, we saw the Young Bucks and Kazuchika Okada arrive in their car. We had the scapegoat, Jack Perry, arrive in his scapegoat bus. They all arrive in the parking lot. That leads into a video package showing us highlights of some of the key matches from Double or Nothing this past Sunday. We had the AEW World Champion, Swerve Strickland, against Killswitch in a non-title match, which felt very random. Now, that when they announced this, they announced it. He had already beaten Christian Cage on Sunday, and it felt like that issue was dead, you know, with Swerve and the patriarchy. So I saw the announcement. I said, well, why are we doing this? But it was tied into a special promotion. So it was part of a promotion that Warner Brothers Discovery is doing for the new season of House of the Dragon. So yeah, the House of the Dragon, I don't watch the show. If you're a Game of Thrones fan, I'm sure you're very much looking forward to the new season. But the reason they did this, you know, you have the dragon, the dinosaur, get it? It's the only reason that this match even happened. The only reason that we got this match here tonight on this show. So Strickland connected with the draping neckbreaker off the apron, Killswitch, then blocked a pump kick from the apron and sent Strickland crashing into the ring steps. Please keep this on. You want it to be kept on? All right, well, we'll see. You know, I am a man of the people, so we'll see. I can't do anything about it right now, so you're going to have to live with it for tonight. But Strickland got sent crashing into the ring steps. Killswitch control through a commercial break. Swerve locked in a desperation triangle into a rolling flatliner. Followed up with an uppercut off the ropes and connected on a brainbuster for two. Killswitch avoided big pressure and hit a headbutt in midair off of a rolling Strickland. The chokeslam connected. Strickland, though, kicked out. Killswitch went outside. He grabbed a chair. And Prince Nana ripped it away from him, distracting Killswitch long enough for Strickland to connect with multiple pump kicks and a Swerve stomp off the apron. Back inside, Swerve wanted a house call kick, but Killswitch caught it, hit another chokeslam, and then a standing moonsault, which is always very impressive. You know, again, for a guy that size to be able to hit a perfect standing moonsault like that, he likes to show off his athleticism. So, Killswitch, though, missed the lariat. Strickland hit a bounce back German, a house call, and a Swerve stomp, and everybody thought it was over. I thought it was over. All the fans there in the Kia Forum, they thought that it was over. But he kicked out, to the surprise of everyone, including Swerve. Strickland hit another house call to officially put him away, so that was the end of that. All that just to get hit with one more kick, and that was the end of the dinosaur. Or the dragon. After the match, Prince Nana gave Swerve some scissors. Now, if you remember what happened a few weeks ago, Christian Cage said that, I'm going to take something from you every single week. And one of the things that Christian Cage and his cohorts took from Swerve was one of his dreadlocks, ripped the hair right out of his head. And so now it was time for Swerve to get his revenge, turn about his fair play. So Nana hands him the pair of scissors. He cuts off a lock of hair, a braid, from Killswitch. This was so goofy. And I'm going to tell you why. The angle itself is fine if you are reading it out loud. It's like, well, that makes sense, right? It's like eye for an eye. What's goofy about it, they got a close-up shot, which they should not have done. As Swerve went to go cut the hair off, the hair was not attached to his head. The hair was attached to the strap on his mask. So they cut the braid off of the mask, and I'm sitting here going, how is this revenge? This is supposed to be his big revenge that he's getting for what was done to him all those weeks ago when his hair got cut from his head. Why would you get a close-up shot of that? Like, you could have done the angle, but not gotten up so close, shot it from a different angle where we can't necessarily see all of it, but then he cuts it off and raises it above, and it's like, all right, he gets his revenge. He cut the fucking hair. Like, yeah, it's like Kane's wig. Exactly. It's like Kane's wig. I don't know why they zoomed in on that. I don't know, but it looked bad. Now, the branding of the match, the whole House of the Dragon thing, purely promotional. It didn't factor into the match at all. Or, you know, I was disappointed that there was no dragon that came out. It started breathing fire. So it didn't mean anything. There was no Christian. There was no Nick Wayne. More importantly and more disappointingly, there was no Mother Wayne. So the patriarchy wasn't even there. It literally just felt like, all right, we want to get Swerve on the show. We want to get the champ on the show. And we have this great promotion. We want to keep our network partner happy. We're in the middle of this negotiation period. We're trying to sign a big contract to keep Dynamite here on the Turner Networks. We want to make sure that we're a team player. And so we'll do whatever they want us to do. And that's really all that this was. We would find out later in the show, though, who his challenger would be for Forbidden Door. So we were not quite done yet with Swerve. The match itself, I thought, was good. Yeah, it was a good match. You know, and I see there are people who are complaining about the fact, why are we seeing Swerve so often? And I do think that you don't need him in the ring every single week. But I also think that you have people who are just, I feel like they're in Roman Reigns mode. You know, where you still have people who have Roman Reigns on the brain, who never shows up. You know, if you think back to his run, right? He never shows up when he's the champion. He never, rarely defends on TV. And when was the last time Roman Reigns, when he was the champion, defended on TV? Probably Matt Riddle, right? 2 years ago. It's okay for the champion to wrestle on TV. It doesn't have to be every week, though. Tony Schiavone then stood up at the announce desk. He had an announcement to make. Like the anonymous GM has sent the message here. And Tony Schiavone stands up and he tells us that, per Tony Khan, Mercedes Moné will have her first defense of the TBS title, and it will happen tonight here at the Kia Forum on Dynamite, and it will come one-on-one against Sky Blue. So we didn't have to wait very long to get the match. They shot that angle all those weeks ago. We got the big reveal tonight, and it's right into the match. But I was happy about that, though. So many times, you know, it's like, all right, we'll announce something for next week. Why not announce something for tonight and give us a big match on the show? Again, I want to see Mercedes in the ring more, not less. So she's somebody who, I'm not going to sit here and go, well, why is the TBS champion defending her title on TBS? That's where she should be defending her title, on fucking TBS. So that was good. We had the debut. Well, this was not good, actually. What I see is up next here. We had the debut of Chris Jericho's new talk show segment, TV Time, with Chris Jericho, which I'm sure you were all very excited about, TV Time here with Chris Jericho. You were all waiting with bated breath to see what would Chris Jericho be doing on this show. Now, it's not what would Jesus do, it's what would Jericho do. That's what the J stands for. What would Jericho do? Well, we had the debut of TV Time. Now, in the ring, they had a giant cutout of, I don't know if it was cardboard or whatever it was, but they had a giant cutout of a tree in the ring. And I had flashbacks because when I was younger and I was in elementary school, my friends, we had a play called The Color Green. And yours truly was one of the feature stars, actually, in this play. And myself and all of my friends, we had to dress up as, or in green, as various things, one of which was a tree. So I had friends of mine who were out on stage dressed like a tree. And so I see this giant tree in the ring, and it reminded me of that. And in case you were wondering, I actually have footage for you. So this is never before seen exclusive world premiere footage here of Solomonster in the color green. Watch when the curtain parts and look who's on the right. There he is in all his glory, wearing the color green. Now you'll see here in a moment. Look at the trees. Look at this. There you go. You got one, two, three. You got three trees here. There you go. World premiere. Boy, it took me back. The color green. You never know what you're going to get here on these streets. You never know. You're going to have women randomly talking out of nowhere. You're going to have Ted Cruz. You're going to have me dressed up as the color green. You never fucking know what you're going to get. That's why you got to tune in live. So we had a giant tree in the ring. We had green carpeting. I guess that's supposed to be grass. I wish I was on grass or taking grass as I was watching this segment. And then we had a new version of the old Geritron 5000. And on the screen, it had the TV Time with Chris Jericho logo on screen. So Big Bill was in the ring. And Big Bill introduced Jericho down to the ring. Jericho gets in and he goes, he says, "Who wants more TV time? You know I do." And Taz on commentary said, "That's a shoot." Oh, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. So Bill said, if there's one thing that Jericho has taught him, it's even though leaves may come down in the fall, they always grow back in the spring, stronger and brighter than ever. Jericho thanks the big redwood and all the fans, all the branches that have sat under the learning tree. So he cackles about how tough his title defense was on Sunday against Hook and Shibata. Actually, I just realized, you know, when I drew Super Chats, it reminds me of the Shibata gimmick. That's what it reminds me of. Shibata, when he types the talk to text into his phone. That's what it is. So he says that he wants to introduce somebody to us. And he introduces us to the bounty hunter, Brian Keith. Chris Jericho has hired a bounty hunter. So he is now part of his crew here. Jericho asks, "What made you want to get sucked into the Jericho vortex and become a disciple of the learning tree?" So Keith said that he noticed a lack of respect for Jericho here in AEW. The longest reigning FTW champion in history. Taz immediately piped in and said that is not accurate. And Excalibur specified he meant for the world. For the world is what the title name now is. So the fans chanted, shut the fuck up. And Jericho told them to quiet down. This is a PG show. So Brian Keith starts shouting, show some respect, over and over and over again. This is like the people who were yelling at me on Sunday night when I tweeted about Adam Copeland. Show respect, show respect. So Jericho tells him to calm down. He said the lesson of the day is that if you want something to happen, you have to go out and grab it. Just like Keith did at Double or Nothing. He respects that he's a bad man. Bill interrupted at that point, Big Bill, and said that he might even say he's a bad apple. Oh, God. And Jericho said, you know what they say, the apple doesn't fall far from the learning tree. And then he fake laughed. So Hook's music interrupted, thank God. He walked out. He dropped some of the security geeks who tried to stop him in the aisleway. Samoa Joe's music played. And everybody is looking towards the tunnels. But then Joe, out of nowhere, he walks right up to Hook. What was he in? Was he sitting in the front row as a fan? Where did he come from? He was right there. Like, they immediately cut back to Hook outside the ring, and he's face-to-face with Joe. I think Joe was just hanging out in the crowd, having popcorn, watching the show. He hasn't had anything better to do since Dynasty. So there he was, in his nice shirt. So now he's face-to-face with Hook. He whispered something in Hook's ear, and the two of them, they left together. That was it. Turned around, walked right out. Maybe Joe was like, look, this segment is fucking terrible. So why don't you and I just go backstage and hang out for a little bit? We'll have some Doritos or something. And off they went. Anything involving Samoa Joe has my attention. He doesn't have to be the AEW World Champion anymore. Joe is great. And so if he's on the show and he's involved in something, I'll pay attention to it. Jericho hamming it up like this is, it's painful. But if Joe is going to be involved here, then I'll tolerate it. But as for the Jericho stuff, again, he's in his own little vortex, as he says, and I don't care for it. But we'll see where the hook in the Joe stuff goes. That's really all I can say about that. Excalibur at this point pitched it to footage of the match from Sunday, highlights of the match between Jon Moxley and Konosuke Takeshita. Then he said, no, I'm sorry. We're going to go to footage of CMLL star Stephanie Vaquer. But then they showed highlights of Moxley and Takeshita anyway. Then they came back with a shot of the announcers at ringside. And they said, well, we're live. Hey, these things happen. Now let's go to footage of CMLL Women's Champion and also the New Japan Strong Women's Champion, Stephanie Vaquer. And so they showed highlights of some of her matches while Excalibur narrated over the video package. They teased her involvement, her possible involvement at Forbidden Door without actually announcing anything or naming who her opponent might be. Stay tuned for that. We'll talk more about that in a second. Forbidden Door this year is supposed to have involvement from New Japan, CMLL, and possibly Stardom. And you have to change it up a little bit because, again, now this is year number 3, I think, right? This would be the 3rd one. And there was a novelty to it at first. The 2nd one was very good. You had, Osprey. I think it was Osprey and Omega last year, right? So, but now it's year 3. That coupled with the fact that so many top New Japan names have migrated over from New Japan to AEW. And it just doesn't have the same allure that it did at the very beginning. So what do? You add other promotions to it. Instead of just New Japan, you have CMLL. Instead of just those two, maybe you throw some Stardom in there. Now that Rossi Ogawa is out of the way and Tony Khan never wanted to work with him, they're probably going to be more open to having Stardom talent. Look, we've had Mina Shirakawa make appearances on TV. Wouldn't surprise me at all to see her have a match lined up. Maybe even something involving her friend Mariah May. Maybe they're partners. I don't know. We'll see. Jon Moxley was out next, the reigning IWGP heavyweight champion, fresh off his win over Takeshita on Sunday with one good arm in another eliminator match, another IWGP eliminator match here in AEW. This time it was against Rocky Romero. And so what that meant is that if Rocky Romero were to beat Jon Moxley here on this show... Oh, man, I didn't know if I was going to be able to say that with a straight face. I wasn't sure, but somehow I made it. But in theory, if Rocky Romero was to be the one to get a win over Jon Moxley, then Rocky Romero would be in line for a shot at the IWGP World Heavyweight title sometime in the near future against whoever the champion is after Dominion, because Moxley is defending the title against Evil at Dominion. And so whoever is the champion then would defend against Rocky if he was to win this match. So before I even get into the match here, and it's going to be brief, I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but if Konosuke Takeshita couldn't get a win, if they couldn't give Takeshita a win over Jon Moxley, do you honestly believe that Rocky Romero stood a chance against this man here in this match? And Romero is actually in an executive role in New Japan. He's been the liaison between the two companies. So not only is he wrestling in AEW, I think he's a VP or an EVP for New Japan or Bushiroad or whatever. So you could say, oh, well, he's technically part of their company, so they may not mind putting him over. They're never going to put him over. He's not out there to be put over. It's not his role on the show. How am I supposed to buy into the fact that this man has a shot when the man who should have gone over on Moxley on Sunday didn't? This whole fucking thing was pointless. So Romero targeted the bad left arm. Moxley wanted a superplex. Romero wrenched at the arm, hit a double stomp off the top. Moxley did eventually hit a one-armed superplex. We got a strike exchange that followed. Romero thought he had the upper hand until Moxley exploded out with a cutter. Romero fought back with the tornado DDT into a cross arm breaker, but Mox spun out into a bulldog choke. Romero hit a rolling armbar out of the corner, but Moxley got to his feet and stomped free. The discus lariat followed, then Death Rider, and Jon Moxley yet again picks up the win. I sure hope that they have got somebody good in mind to eventually beat Jon Moxley in one of these matches, and it better not be fucking Evil at Dominion. They better have somebody good in mind here. They're going to go through all these eliminators and really build up Moxley, and I would hope the idea is that eventually someone will beat him, and it'll be a shock, and then that person will get a title match. They're going to keep doing these. I just hope they have somebody good in mind here at the end of this. So from Moxley, we go to his better half, Renee, who is in the back, and behind her are Samoa Joe and Hook. She goes over to ask them what happened out there during TV time. And Joe said that what happened out there is that they learned their first lesson. They don't exist on their time. Truly dangerous men exist on our time. And then they walked off together. So we shall see where that goes. If Joe is going to end up swerving this kid, or if maybe there'll be some kind of partnership here. You know, I said a few weeks ago, if they wanted to do a trio with Joe, Shibata, and Hook, I wouldn't mind it. I think it could be entertaining. And as far as the Jericho stuff, Joe may be the only thing that can make that entertaining for me if they're going to be involved. Don Callis came to the ring to offer a contract to the newest member of the Don Callis family. Got in the ring, obviously got a ton of heat, as he always does here. He announced that Orange Cassidy, come on out. Says that when he sees Orange, he sees himself. Excalibur said the last person to be booed this loud in the Kia Forum was Larry Bird. Cassidy came to the ring, and Callis said that this was the moment that everybody's been waiting for. And he called Cassidy a star in this industry, and he presented him with a contract to join the Don Callis family. And he said, look, I even already filled it all out for you. So Cassidy took the contract, and he very slowly ripped it in half. As Callis picked up the pieces, Cassidy simply said no, went to go leave. And Callis spun him around, said, nobody says no to me. That might have been what got him in trouble in TNA. Anyway, Cassidy took his glasses off before Stokely Hathaway and Chris Statlander, they walked out on stage, walked out from the back. Hathaway said there's nothing about Cassidy that he likes. He's just like Willow Nightingale. And Statlander said that on behalf of her best friend, he happily accepts Callis's offer to join the Don Callis family. What does he mean by that? Or what does she mean by that? Stokely had already spoken. What did she mean by that? Well, they cut back to the ring, and in the corner behind them, behind Cassidy, in the corner, I think he was, I don't know if it was a suit, but he was all dressed up, but it was Trent Beretta. This is my, that's my shocked face there. I've only been saying it, probably everybody's been saying it for a month now. It's not like you couldn't see this coming. But there he is. There's Trent Beretta. And he ends up violently attacking Orange Cassidy. Laid him out. Beretta busted him open from the forehead. Kept screaming, I hate you, I hate you. Before holding his arms open, Don Callis is in the corner acting scared like he doesn't know what's going on here, but Trent puts his arms out and they do the hug, and they even did the camera zoom out when they did the hug. So Trent Beretta is now officially a member of the Don Callis family. It was predictable, but it was the right move to make. If you're Trent Beretta, you're very happy that you are in this role. And I say that not because all the members of the Don Callis family have gone on to much bigger and better things. Have they really? No, they haven't. Sammy Guevara thing didn't work out very well. Kyle Fletcher is part of the family, but what has that really done for him? Takeshita joined with Don Callis. I actually think it's a good role for him to be in because Callis, I think Takeshita as a heel should have a manager anyway, but has that done wonders for Takeshita's career? Not exactly. Hobbs, before he got hurt? Nope. So it's not like it's really benefiting anybody except Don Callis. Don Callis is getting more television time than the people he represents. So I'm not saying this is going to be some kind of game changer for Trent Barretta. Like, oh boy, this is going to turn his career around. But where would he be if he was not going to be part of the Callis family? He'd be making an appearance every now and then on Rampage, and he'd probably end up on the Ring of Honor roster. So if you're Trent Barretta, this is not the worst spot for you to be in. It may not be the best spot, but it's certainly not the worst. But I think nobody expected Orange Cassidy to actually accept and be part of the Don Callis family. So they went by the book with it, but you know, I thought it was the right call to make. Then we had Mercedes Moné, the brand new TBS champion, defending her title for the first time and in her Dynamite in-ring debut, one-on-one with Sky Blue. Mercedes avoided the early charge by Blue, fired off some corner forearms, and she hit the springing arm drag that she does. Blue got sent outside with a pair of head scissors. Meteora by Mercedes off the apron to the floor. Sky Blue fired off a kick between the ropes and a draping neck breaker, then to gain control heading into the picture-in-picture. Mercedes battled back with the sunset flip Meteora for two. The backstabber connected. Moné, though, took too long, and Blue cut her off in the corner with the cheeky Nando's kick. Mercedes dodged the TKO, which hit at the beginning of the show, but it did not hit here. Both ladies traded thrust kicks. Sky Blue wanted her Code Blue finish, but when she jumped up onto Mercedes' back, Mercedes countered into the Moné Maker. Her finish for the win. After the match, she's in the ring, and she raises the TBS title high above her head when all of a sudden we hear theme music, and I don't recognize whose music it is, but then I see out walks Stephanie Vaquer, as I said before, the reigning CMLL Women's World Champion, and she also had the New Japan Strong Women's Championship. She walks out on stage, both ladies hold up their respective titles. Clearly, the match for Forbidden Door is upon us. It will be Mercedes and Stephanie Vaquer on June 30th at the UBS Arena. That's a great one. That's a great addition there for that card. The only question that I would have is whether or not their respective titles are going to be on the line. They haven't announced that yet. Is it going to be... We know it's going to be champion against champion. Is it going to be title for title? The New Japan Strong women's title was supposed to be in the hands of Mercedes Moné last year. She was the one who was supposed to be the first ever champion, had she not gotten hurt. As soon as she got hurt, they called an audible. Willow won the belt. It would not surprise me to see her win that title. So if it's champion against champion, title for title, then I think it's a win for Mercedes. And they probably put the belt on her like they wanted to do a year ago. But from what I have seen and what I know of Vaquer and obviously knowing Mercedes' work, this right here is the reason why Mercedes signed with AEW. One of the reasons why she came to this company. It's to be able to work matches like this. It's to be able to go to Japan and work if she wants to. It's to be able to have the freedom that she felt like she would not have in WWE. It's matches like this. So that is a great addition to that card. If you're going to do a Forbidden Door card, that's the kind of match that you do. The match itself here with Mercedes and Sky Blue, relatively quick. It was competitive, but it was only about 6 minutes, yeah, maybe 7 minutes. After getting nothing from this woman for the first 2 months, again, I will not complain about her wrestling and defending her title on TV. We need to see more of it. You're the TBS champion. You should be defending that title on TBS. Plain and simple. Renee was outside the trainer's room when Stokely Hathaway and Chris Statlander ran her off. So Stokely took the mic and called Willow Nightingale pathetic for being 30 years old and still thinking that Disneyland is a magical place. He said the catalyst for all this was the four-way a few weeks ago in how Statlander said that she desperately wanted to be the TBS champion and Nightingale didn't listen. But Stokely did. Says he'll always be the shoulder to cry on. Statlander has come back from back-to-back ACL tears. While bitches in the back go home for much less, and he's not talking about the women. He introduced the new and improved Chris Statlander, who said that she did something for herself for once, and then she got booed for it. She said that she's only been here as a bodyguard for people who think that she'll just clean up their messes. She is no longer the protector. Everyone will need protection from her. This was good. This was good. The first heel promo here from Statlander. And she looked dead into the camera. She looked totally serious, like she was about to wreck some shit. And this is going to be good. It's good that they have already set up a feud for Willow. She lost the title, and I know a lot of people are upset about that. They thought that's not fair. She deserved a longer run. Well, life's not fair. And when you're Tony Khan and you spend a gazillion dollars to sign all of these free agents, you don't debut them and beat them. Look at the way they protected Okada. Look at the way he protects Ospreay. Of course, he was going to protect Mercedes and not beat her in her first match. Should have seen that coming. Sunday should not have been a surprise. I thought that they actually protected Willow by giving her the visual pin in that match. If you remember, she had the three count, but there was no referee. So they did what they could to protect her. But now, when somebody loses the title or somebody drops out of the title picture, and this goes for WWE as well, not just AEW, there is a tendency to get lost in the shuffle. And they just don't focus their attention as much on those women's undercard feuds. It's just not a priority, usually, for them. The fact that she already has a feud set up when they bring her back, I assume in the next few weeks, is good for her. And I'm looking forward to seeing Willow and Statlander one-on-one. I think that's going to be a great match. Should be a good feud. And this was a good promo here. We had footage of MJF's return at Double or Nothing, a whole video package narrated by a female that was not identified, but had highlights of what we saw on Sunday mixed in with highlights of really milestones from throughout his career. I thought it was an excellent little history package on him. It would have been better to have him on the show, but at least they gave us this, and again, they're promoting his return for next week's show. Then we had the Elite out to the ring. The Young Bucks, Kazuchika Okada, Jack Perry to address the TNT title situation with Adam Copeland being out with what Excalibur said was a fractured ankle. And for those who didn't hear it from Copeland himself, it's a fractured tibia. So the Bucks came out first. They flipped the coin, and then out came Okada, then Jack Perry. Some fans were chanting for CM Punk, and the first thing that Okada did, he took the mic and he said, "Shut up, bitches." Fantastic. Fantastic. How can you not love this man? He's adapted very well. He looked like he was having a ball on Sunday. He had that sign, Anarchy in the Arena. They have all kinds of garbage and plunder everywhere. And he has that sign, Rainmaker Drive. It's like a still shot of him holding the sign up, big, fat, cheesy smile on his face. He's enjoying himself. So then Jack Perry got on the mic. And he said that the Elite run this shit. He said he got set on fire on Sunday and took his piece of the dragon when he pinned one of the greatest of all time in Bryan Danielson. Nick Jackson said that on Monday they released the Reebok pump. So the story behind this, the Young Bucks have a shoe deal. They came out with a version of the Reebok pump because when they were younger, the pumps were all the rage. When I was younger, I had a Reebok pump. I think it was Reebok. Maybe it wasn't Reebok. Maybe it was a different brand. You know what? I think it was a different brand. Oh, it was LA Gear. Or am I thinking? No, I think I'm thinking of the light-up shoe. It was all about gimmicks back then. I definitely had the LA Gear light-up shoe. But pumps were a thing. They're supposed to make you jump higher, right? I couldn't jump any higher. You know, I'd be at school on the basketball court playing other kids at school. Maybe because I was the white guy. I don't know. I can't jump. I'm trying to jump high. I'm pump, pump, pump. I'm like John Cena. It didn't work for me. But they were cool. They were a gimmick. And they were like $120. So anyway, they have their own pump. They're very excited about this. And they said that it dropped on Monday and it became the hottest selling Reebok sneaker in multiple years. And he said, you know, that performance, by the other members of the Elite, their fellow members on Sunday, and anarchy in the arena was unbelievable. And so he and his brother, Matthew, they came here tonight bearing gifts for Okada and for Jack Perry. So they directed Okada's attention to the big screen where they showed a black Lambo. They had a Lamborghini pull into the parking lot outside, and it had a Rainmaker license plate on it. They cut back to Okada in the ring. He has this, he's looking up like he's mystified. He's just at a loss for words. He's dumbfounded by this. He starts fake crying. He puts his hand over his face. He's fake crying, all emotional. He goes, I forgot. What did he say? He's like, I forgot exactly what he said. But like he was selling it. And then Nick Jackson got on the mic and he led the crowd. And they chanted it too, at a You Deserve It chant. So now everybody is chanting You Deserve It at him. So then Matt turned his attention to Adam Copeland. And he said that he can't help but feel responsible for what happened to him, because on Sunday, when he saw him in the back before his match, he told him to go out there and break a leg. Oh, is this a dream? Yes, that's what he said. That's what Okada said. He goes, is this a dream? It's fucking great, man. Okada is fantastic. Bringing him in as a heel in the way that he did is actually one of the best booking decisions that Tony Khan has ever made. It was bringing in Sting and pairing him up with Darby Allin and bringing in Okada as a heel. Two of my favorite decisions that he ever made. So Matt says, yeah, I told Copeland on Sunday to break a leg, so I kind of feel responsible. He said, look, I'm thinking about you and we are praying for you. And then he announced that Copeland was hereby stripped of the TNT championship. So at least they're not doing some interim title nonsense. I was worried that Tony Khan was going to get on an interim title kick again. Thank God he's not doing that. That would have been terrible. And he said, since the network is on their ass about crowning a new champion, he had just the guy in mind. So Okada already got his gift. Now it was time for Jack Perry to get his. He said after his pinfall win in Anarchy in the Arena, Jack Perry, the scapegoat, is the brand new TNT champion. But wait, not so fast. Christopher Daniels, who was fired a few weeks ago by the Elite, he comes out on the ramp and he claims that the severance package that you guys offered me, which was like 30 days, he goes, I don't need it. Because Tony Khan has made me a temporary EVP. And when I make an announcement, you know that it's coming from Tony Khan. And he said, Jack Perry, if you want to be the TNT champion, you're going to have to earn it. And so he announced that there are going to be a series of qualifying matches that are going to be taking place on television here in these next few weeks to decide who goes on to Forbidden Door to challenge for the right to call themselves the TNT champion, because the title is now vacant, and they will meet at Forbidden Door in a ladder match. Of course, everybody cheers the announcement. He also said that in these qualifying matches, there will be no seconds, meaning no managers, no bodyguards, or anything like that. There would be no outside interference, and the qualifying matches will begin taking place on Friday Night Dynamite, right here in Los Angeles. Scared the shit out of me. I said, not another show. No. No. Please. Please. We have enough. I have enough shows to watch during the week. I can't take another one. After what happened last night, I'm going to have to start more consistently watching NXT again now. The last thing I need is another episode of Dynamite. See, you had one job, Daniels. You had one job. Night one. And you couldn't even get it right. So the Elite initially were very upset by this announcement, and they said that we're going to go tell you to your face how proud we are to have you back. But then the Acclaim's music hit, out comes the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn, and they stood next to Daniels, and so the Elite thought better of doing anything about it. I actually like Christopher Daniels as Tony Khan's surrogate here. I think it's a smart move. Tony Khan is terrible in situations like this. He's so awkward. The last thing we need is him coming out and screaming, you know, we're going to have qualifying matches, and the winners of the qualifying matches are going to go on to Forbidden Door, and we're going to crown a new TNT champion! Yes! 9 days! 9 days! Yo, we don't need that. Christopher Daniels, he comes out there, he's measured, he's like the Adam Pearce of Dynamite. He's like the most vanilla executive, the most vanilla-looking executive, but he's composed, he can speak, he's poised. He's perfect for that role. So he could be Tony Khan's talking head. But this was sensible, you know, as far as what they ended up doing here. I thought that this was the... This was the sensible way to go about doing this. Here's the thing. They had a casino gauntlet match on this very show. So you're not going to do another gauntlet. In a few weeks, we're going to get qualifying matches for the Owen, the men's and women's Owen Hart tournaments. And I know Tony Khan loves his tournaments, but you don't want to do another tournament this close to two tournaments that are about to kick off. So what do? My thought was, you have qualifying matches on TV, and you send the winners of those qualifying matches to Forbidden Door for a fatal four-way match. What they did was more or less the same thing. Instead of a fatal four-way, it's a ladder match. And that makes sense. Hang a ladder from the ceiling. I don't know how many people we're talking about here. It really shouldn't be more than four. I don't know if there'll be four people, six people. But I think it's the right thing to do. It actually makes sense. And I like the fact that the qualifying matches, apparently they're contesting them under Continental Classic rules. No outside interference, no managers allowed at ringside. So I like that aspect of it too. So I think in terms of how they're handling the situation, which is unfortunate, it was completely avoidable. It was completely avoidable, but it happened. You know, look, it happened, and I wish him well. Hopefully he'll be back soon, and hopefully it's a lesson learned for everybody not to jump feet first from the top of a fucking cage. But nonetheless, you make the best of a bad situation, and I thought they did what they had to do. I still think that Jack Perry is going to end up with the TNT title, but I also don't know who the other members of the ladder match are going to be. You know, we're assuming Perry qualifies, which I'm sure he will. We know the first qualifier happens on Rampage, not Dynamite, on Friday night. It's Takeshita one-on-one against Penta. My guess is Takeshita will go on. And look, I wouldn't mind him winning either. But I still feel like in the end, it's going to be Jack Perry getting that title. If it's not Jack Perry, it would be another babyface. I don't think it's going to be Takeshita. I don't think it's going to be another heel. If it's a heel, I think it's Perry. If it's a babyface, then who knows? We don't know who else is going to be in the tournament, but if it's going to be a heel, it's going to be Jack Perry. Swerve Strickland was in the back with Prince Nana, and Swerve said that he took down another legend at Double or Nothing, and he returned the favor to Killswitch earlier tonight. He said he's looking at some competitors for the upcoming main event, and there are some surprises, and he is wondering who will be next to step foot into Swerve's house. That led to our main event, which was the best part of the entire show, which was the Casino Gauntlet match, only the second one that they have ever done, and the second one in as many months that they have done, to determine the number one contender for the AEW World Heavyweight title at Forbidden Door on June 30th. This was a hell of a match. Switchblade Jay White came out at number one to kick off the gauntlet, and guess who was number two? Pack. That's the match I wanted at Double or Nothing. That's the match I thought, well, maybe we can get it in the Owen. Well, we got it here. They kicked off the gauntlet. Pack wasted no time in seeking revenge for what happened at the pay-per-view. Jay got off one move, one offensive maneuver, before Mystico came out at number three from CMLL. That was the first surprise. We got a quick sequence with Pack and Mystico that sent him to the floor with White. Mystico hit a dive from the top, taking both men out. That took us into the commercial break. Will Ospreay was in at number four. This was also a surprise. I was not expecting him to be in this match. And even when I saw him, I didn't automatically think, oh my God, he's going to win. I was like, I wonder how they're going to get out of this. But then I remembered it's only one fall to a finish in the gauntlet. So it's like, all right, well, he's in the gauntlet. He's not going to be pinned. but he's not going to win. I still was not, like, the idea of him being the one to go to Forbidden Door, it just never crossed my mind as being realistic. So even when I saw him and the reaction he got and everything, and he's had all this momentum, I still didn't think he was actually going to go over and win this match. But he came out, and you should have heard this crowd. I mean, this crowd was on fire for this man when he came out. They reacted bigger to him than anybody else. And everybody just about in this match got a huge reaction. There were a lot of people who got great reactions from the crowd in this match. But if you want to know what separates Will Ospreay from everybody else that was in this match, listen to this crowd. And frankly, the crowds on most weeks when he comes out on TV. I mean, he's super over. You can't deny that. So he gets inside, immediately hits Pip Pip Cheerio on Mystico before an intense face-off with Jay White. There's history there between them. He hit the corkscrew kick, but Pac nearly slid in and stole the pin attempt on a roll-up for two. Pac and Ospreay had a face-off, and Mystico flew in off the top, hit a La Mystica on Ospreay before Ospreay could tap out, though. Shota Umino, Shooter, from New Japan Pro Wrestling, entered at number 5. He got Chance of Shooter. You know, you got to be careful chanting that in a crowd here in this country, unfortunately. I mean, that might be okay over in Japan, but you start shouting Shooter here in a crowd in America, and unfortunately, it has a very different meaning. So Umino slugged it out with Mystico. There was an amazingly quick sequence here with Ospreay and Umino, who hit a series of slingshot DDTs for two. Claudio Castagnoli was in at number 6, and Jay White ran for higher ground. He was grabbing dudes and throwing them in the way, trying to avoid Claudio at all costs. But eventually, Claudio caught up to him, got him in the giant swing, and then they went to a break. In the middle of the giant swing, they went to a commercial break. But during the break, I mean, he gave swings to everybody. He almost swung the referee. He was going nuts. In at number 7, we got another surprise. Lio Rush. Been a while since we've seen Lio Rush in an AEW ring. He had a very brief run. Might have been a couple of runs, but haven't seen him in a while. So he came out, and he just lightning quick, which got over big with the crowd because you can't catch this guy. No matter what Claudio tried to do, he couldn't get his hands on him. Rush and, or not Rush. Who was it? Was it White? I don't remember who it was, but it was Umino. They were trading. Oh, it was, I said Rush. It was Lio Rush. I wrote Rush in my notes and I'm thinking Rush. Because there was a segment earlier that I mentioned in the back where Rush, he called out MJF basically and said, you know, when you mess with the bull, you get the horns. So anyway, Lio and Umino, they traded misdirect attempts. Both got mowed down, though, by Claudio, who stood tall before number 8 made his way out. Orange Cassidy, this fucking guy, it doesn't matter what happens to him. He got busted open earlier in the show. Here he comes. He's back. So down to the ring he comes. Cassidy blocked the suplex into a Stun Dog Millionaire and then hit a spinning DDT to Claudio. As Cassidy stumbled, Ospreay wound up for a hidden blade, but he hesitated. White flew in with a sleeper suplex and a Uranagi as Cassidy fought off Blade Runner. Echicero entered at number 9. I know there's quite a few fans of Echicero. I keep hearing a lot of good things about Echicero. So he ran wild with a wheelbarrow on Ospreay before nearly rolling up Will for a two count. Mystico cut him off with the top rope Hurricanrana. Umino hit a pump knee on Cassidy, who responded with an orange punch. Meanwhile, Pac tried for the black arrow on Jay White, but just like a Double or Nothing, Juice Robinson comes out, and Juice Robinson crotches this man on the top rope. Poor Pac-Man. This guy just can't catch a break. So then Juice ran off. Jay wanted Blade Runner on Cassidy, but Ospreay flew in with the hidden blade. The Stormbreaker attempt got countered by Cassidy into a Snap-Rana for two. But Ospreay answered with the Oscutter to finally win the match, and Will Ospreay wins his second straight casino gauntlet. Back-to-back months, this man has won gauntlet matches to earn the right to challenge for a title. The first one, he ended up winning the title. Now he gets to challenge for the AEW World Heavyweight title at Forbidden Door. After the match, Swerve Strickland walked out from the back with Prince Nana, and he had a face-off with Ospreay to close out the show. This was a whirlwind 20-minute main event, plenty of surprise entrants. The crowd was on fire for the entire thing. It felt like a sprint, but it went 21 minutes. It's not like it was all that quick. They ended up having about 9 people in this thing. Ospreay wins the gauntlet, and now we are going into Forbidden Door in a matter of weeks, in a month, basically, right? It's May 29th, or now it's May 30th officially, right? What time is it? No, it's almost May 30th. So we're 1 month away here from Forbidden Door, and I was not expecting to get this match this upcoming month. I looked at this and I said, there's your Wembley Stadium main event. Now, it is possible that it could still be the Wembley main event, right? I mean, who's to say? Who's to say that they don't run it back for a second time? You know, maybe the finish they do at Forbidden Door necessitates a rematch. It just doesn't feel very likely to me, though. So it makes me wonder, why is Tony Khan doing the match now? Why is he giving this match away now? This man just won the international title. Now, I said going into Double or Nothing, him winning the international title does not prevent him from going to Wembley and challenging for the world title. But I also wasn't expecting the very first show after he wins the international title that they're basically pulling a Cody Rhodes, Logan Paul, and they're doing champion against champion at Forbidden Door. Now, they have not said that it's going to be title for title. I mean, Cody and Logan ended up not being title for title. They wanted you to think that it was. That would have been very dumb. And I can't say that I would necessarily want to see it here either. I just, you know, again, if Will was going to win the title, Wembley would be the place for it. So I don't see Will Ospreay winning this match. So it just makes me wonder, how are they going to go about doing it? Maybe they will have some kind of a fluky finish, you know, to necessitate a rematch. Maybe that is the direction. Or maybe they're doing this match now. The plan is not yet to put the title on Ospreay. And maybe MJF is going to get a match with Swerve. Remember, they teased that match last year before MJF got hurt and had the match with Joe. They had that backstage interaction, the two of them. They had that great promo segment in the back. Maybe we're finally going to get MJF and Swerve for the world title at Wembley Stadium. Maybe Hangman is going to come back, and we're going to get Swerve and Hangman, but this time in a stadium. How can they not run that match back one more time? You know, now that Swerve is the champion, it's the first thing that Hangman should want when he comes back. All of a sudden, Swerve has a few different options for who he can step into the ring with in August, but August is still very far off. Right now, we're focused on Forbidden Door. And whatever his motivations are for doing it now and not later, it's going to be a fucking great match. That match alone makes that a must-see show. So all of a sudden, we don't even have a full card yet. We don't know exactly who is and isn't going to be on there. But we know that Swerve and Ospreay is your main event. And thank God it's not Tanahashi. We've got Mercedes against Stephanie Vaquer, which is going to be a great match. We're already off to a great start here. I'm already looking forward to the show. The Forbidden Door concept feels kind of tired, and I can't say that my excitement level, going into it was terribly high, but even just with these first two matches, like, I'm ready to go. Like, this is a show now that I'm looking forward to already, and we're still a month out, and that's a good thing. So that's what I'm focused on. I'm getting the match that I wanted. It just wasn't where I wanted it or where I thought it would take place. But where Swerve goes from here is going to be very interesting, because Ospreay is by far the most over babyface, with the potential exception of MJF, you know, in the entire company. And I've been saying, you know, Swerve is new in this role and he needs all the support and all the help he can get. So now he's going to go in there, and what is the crowd reaction going to be like? Yeah, that first promo segment that we get in these next few weeks where these two men go face-to-face on TV, that's going to be a very interesting experiment of sorts to see how the crowd reacts to that. But it kind of goes back to something I talked about on TNT, actually, with JD last night. We talked about a lot of things on the show last night on his channel. One of the things that I mentioned when I was talking about Swerve is I likened what I would like to see now that they're getting some guys back, right? Cole, I don't know when Cole's going to wrestle, but they got MJF back. You got MJF, you got Ospreay, you got Swerve. Who knows who else may be going after the world title? Maybe Hangman. One of my favorite periods in wrestling was the end of 96 into the beginning of 97 in WWE. When you had this group of about 4 to 5 guys who all hated each other and all had one common goal in mind. They wanted to be the world champion. Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Undertaker, Steve Austin, Psycho Sid, right? That's 5. You could probably even throw Vader in there, honestly. That would be 6. But you had that collection of guys, and they were dead serious. It wasn't like anything was played up for comedy, but it all revolved around the title, and you had all these names in the main event scene. If we end up with something like that in AEW, that's what I want to see. I don't want just, okay, well, the feud of the month now is going to be Swerve and Christian, or the feud of the month now is going to be Swerve and whoever his opponent is going to be at Forbidden Door. Let's get 4 guys. Let's just say at the top of the card, who could conceivably be world champion, who all want to be world champion, who are all fucking with each other. They're cutting promos on each other, right? They're going balls to the wall. Like that to me makes it more fun. The more top names in that mix, actively in that mix that you can have for that world title, the more fun it is going to be. Now that they got MJF back and hopefully they'll get more people back soon, I would love to see a bunch of people nipping at Swerve's heels. Let him work for it. You know, he's got to go out there and he's got to prove why he's the one who belongs in that spot, right? And it gives him more competition, more opponents to be able to work with. That, to me, is what would make me more interested week to week in AEW television. If they could figure out who those guys are going to be, that, to me, is what would, I think, help draw people into the product. That sort of thing. Because I kind of miss that, you know, where you really felt like these guys do not like each other. And it just all revolved around that top title like it was the most important thing in the world. It's tough now because AEW has so many titles, you know, and it's just the nature of wrestling. And look, WWE has a lot of titles too. If we're going to go back and compare wrestling now to wrestling 25 years ago, yeah, there were a lot less titles in any company at any given moment. So in AEW, it's hard because everybody's a champion. You know, Okada's got his title, and then you've got the TNT title, and Jericho's got a title, and this guy's got a title, and Ospreay's got a title. Ospreay's wrestling for the world title, and he's already got a title. And it just, you know, what does it all mean? But anyway, so that as we go into the summer, is the sort of thing I'd like to see more of here in this company. Instead of just the, you know, the typical kind of one-on-one type stuff, get Jay White in that mix. Again, free him up to do more single stuff. I want to see Switchblade in the mix, man. I mean, that's the kind of thing I want to see. Maybe Malakai now. Although Malakai lost to Copeland, it's pretty clear to me. I don't think Tony Khan wants to put gold on him right now. He may have some thought about what his future may be, and it may not be in AEW. So, but anyway, am I sure? Because everyone will cry about who's going to lose, or now who gives a shit? Who cares? See, that's part of the problem, is that I think Tony Khan and I think Paul Levesque, I think promoters can fall into the trap of, well, we have to protect everybody. And when you worry about protecting everybody, you end up protecting nobody. You can't be afraid to mix it up a little bit. Some guys are going to win, some guys are going to lose. It comes down to how they're booked. You can lose, but if you're booked in a strong way, you know, you'll get out of it okay. You'll get out of it just fine. You can't be afraid. Well, you know, we can't do this because I don't want to beat that guy. And we can't do that because I don't want to beat that guy. I just was talking about the Owen Hart tournament. It's the same thing. If the Owen Hart winners this year are going on to Wembley Stadium to win title shots, I don't want to see Dustin Rhodes in the Owen Hart tournament this year. I don't want to see Rocky Romero in the Owen Hart tournament this year. I don't want to see Kyle Fletcher in the Owen Hart tournament this year. They're great wrestlers. Who cares? This is for a shot at the world championship. MJF should be in the Owen Hart tournament. I was going to say Will Ospreay, but he's already getting a shot at Forbidden Door. I don't know if he'll be in the tournament or not. But MJF should be in the tournament. If he's back by then, Hangman should be in the tournament. Samoa Joe should be in the tournament, former AEW World Champion. Fill that tournament up with big names who are worthy and believable. You can believe that, hey, they might go to the main event at Wembley Stadium. Some of these guys they put in these tournaments, it's like, you fucking know. It's like in the Royal Rumble. When Santino Marella comes out at number 22, is Santino going to go on to win the Royal Rumble? Fuck no, he's not. And I used to think, why is he out there? He was out there for comic relief. To go back even further, in the Royal Rumbles of years past, you see Virgil come out. What the fuck is Virgil going to do? He's not going to win anything. So I don't want to see people like that in those tournaments. But you can't be afraid to beat certain guys. It's okay. It's not going to be the death of them. You know, it's all in how you book it, how you follow up on things. I want to see top names in that tournament if that is what is on the line in the tournament this year. That's the sort of thing I'm talking about. And you put those matches together on television with guys like I just mentioned, that's what I want to watch. I'll be tuned in for that. Sign me up for that. So the pieces are all there for them to have a pretty incredible summer run here with all the things they have planned here in June and July, heading into Wembley, right? The road to Wembley could be very exciting. It all comes down to Tony Khan and what he is willing to do and the kind of matches that he's willing to put together. But Swerve and Ospreay at Forbidden Door, man, that's going to be a fantastic match. And I am very much looking forward to it. Twitter poll, what did you think of Dynamite tonight from the Kia Forum? 46% thumbs up for tonight's show, 24% thumbs in the middle, and 29% thumbs down. Only 46%, huh? Thumbs up? Well, I disagree with that. This was definitely a thumbs up show, definitely more than 46%. But that's my opinion. You could chime in with yours. That's what I say about that. But again, man, I mean, they have so many talented guys and big names on that roster. And as they start to get some of them back, Omega, I don't know if Kenny Omega is going to be back in time for Wembley. I hope so. I would love to see him and Okada get that match in at Wembley this year. But, you know, it may not be realistic. We'll see. But like I said, man, the pieces are all there for them to have a pretty incredible run with the Owen Hart tournament and everything else they have going on. We read your super chats. Thank you, by the way, for those. Drew Johnson has, I mean, tonight he has been a beast. He's dropped a bunch of 50s. I'm going to read through these here. If you got them, get them on in before we get out of here. I will read your messages. The Real CS kicking us off earlier with a $4.99. It seems like WWE and NXT are going to be doing an invasion-type angle with Ethan Page. He posted on social media saying that he isn't signed anywhere. It's because you're being worked. That's what he wants you to think. He wants you to think that he's a free agent. They're not putting a free agent on their television show and letting him lay out their champion at the end of the show. You got to use your head, man. You got to use your head with these things. Come on, CS. You should know better. CS, back again. I think one of the main reasons why fans dislike Jericho is that most of his gimmicks in AEW have been references to WWE, especially the Jericho Appreciation. That's not why people don't like Jericho. Carlos Galvan, somebody call 911 because Mercedes stole my heart. Okada got the biggest pop of the night. We'll listen to the review after I get home from the show. Wow, so even more than Ospreay. He was in the building. It sounded like Ospreay got the biggest reaction of the night to me, but Okada was up there. So that's kind of surprising. Chris AXC, missed a few reviews, so I'm sorry if you said this already, but thoughts on the AJ storyline leading to a match with all this to get Nick his first WWE match. I did float that as a possibility. I'm still of the opinion that AJ is going to be traded. Now, whether it's to Raw or whether it's to NXT, or whether he ends up in TNA, working a match in TNA. Wouldn't that be something? With this newfound partnership that the two companies have together, if AJ Styles ended up having a match in TNA for the first time in, I guess it would probably be about a decade. I think that's a very real possibility. Him wrestling all this is possible, but it just doesn't seem likely right now. Oz and Glorious with the 10 spot really enjoyed Dynamite, especially the Elite and the Battle Royal. Did I miss something? What Battle Royal? Let me tell you, though, I just can't wait for another Daniel Garcia grows up and proves himself with Daddy Magic in his corner / on commentary story. You know, it's a shame because there was a time where Garcia seemed like he was on the verge of breaking out to that next level, whatever that level is, and they just shit the bed. They didn't follow through. It's all about the follow through. That really is the most important part. All right, Bender McSimpson, we are caught up to our list here. Thank you for the $4.99. Really good match from Sky Blue and Mercedes. Not sure why they blew through it so fast. Could have been a nice first feud for Mercedes. No, I think what they did was fine. Sky Blue was a fine first opponent. I don't think you're not going to get a whole feud out of it. That's not a whole feud. That's a match. That's a match you build up for TV. They could have saved it for next week or 2 weeks from now. But this is not a pay-per-view match. You're not going to build up a month of story and then do it at Forbidden Door. You know, they're going to be building now to Vakur and Mercedes. So they had to get this out of the way. So I don't have an issue with what they did tonight. Bender also says, Okada is the best heel in wrestling. Change my mind. It's got to be neck and neck. It's got to be Okada and Drew McIntyre. It's got to be. I mean, I would probably go with Drew, and I love Okada. I would go Drew, but it's Drew and Okada, I think, at the top of the mountain right now. They are just fantastic. The Juliet with the $25 super chat reports are there may be more NXT and TNA working together beyond Jordan Grace facing Roxanne Perez at Battleground. Also, thoughts on last night's NXT surprises. I think it's great. You know, gets people talking. Ethan Page, when he left AEW, is someone who I said is someone who deserves a look from WWE or NXT. And so I was happy to see him pop up, and I think the Jordan Grace stuff is great. Hopefully we get to see more of it. I think when companies work together and they are able to cooperate or exchange talent, I think that's great. I think that benefits everybody, especially the fans. And Jordan Grace was excellent in the Royal Rumble this year. Jordan Grace looked better than everybody else, every WWE star that was in the Women's Royal Rumble this year. Like, she belongs there. She looks like she belongs there. She just fits right in. Woody Allen's right-hand man with the $6 super chat. I love your Rumble 2019 review and Bob Holly book review. Why did it take so long to put the Macho Man in the Hall of Fame? Anything to do with Stephanie? No, but just pettiness. Pettiness and spite on the part of Vince McMahon. So fuck him for that. You know, we got deprived of a Macho Man induction speech. Or, I guess, acceptance. A Macho Man acceptance speech. You know, I know his brother was there and he did the honors, but it just wasn't the same. But that was all Vince McMahon. You can blame him for that. Rodimus Prime, Swerve against Ospreay at Forbidden Door. Shut up and take my money. That's right. And I'm gonna piss off a lot of people when I tell them that I am going to spend $50 to see that match. What a terrible person I am. Jerome Eugenio, maybe Swerve cheats to win and turns back heel to beat Ospreay. You know, I did think about that, and I wouldn't mind it. I wouldn't mind it. And then you could also get to a second match that way, and you can run it back at Wembley in the main event with Swerve as the clear heel. And you already know Ospreay is going to be the huge babyface at Wembley. Maybe that's the idea. Maybe the idea is that, look, Swerve never really did anything to turn babyface. The fans just organically gravitated towards him because they think he's cool and they respect him and they wanted to see him get his, you know, flowers, which he finally did. But if he feels like that title is in jeopardy, you know, he may have a stranglehold on it and feel like, I'm going to do whatever I have to fucking do to make sure that this title stays with me. If I have to nutshot the guy, if I have to hook the tights, hold the rope, have Nana help me out, whatever it is. And then he hands Will Ospreay his very first loss since signing a full-time deal with AEW. But just the nature of how he beats him. Maybe it leads to Ospreay winning the Owen anyway. Maybe he does win the Owen. And that's how he earns his way back into the main event. Maybe. I think that's very possible. And you know what? I'd be totally fine with that. As over as Swerve is, it would keep the belt on him a little bit longer. It would probably get him a Wembley main event. And I actually like that idea. Drew Johnson with the $50 super chat bomb. Not his only one, but that is his first one. Came in earlier. Thank you, Drew. Jericho's segment was garbage. No MJF tonight. What the fuck? Go HBK. Love you, bro. Thank you, Drew. Love you, brother. Chris Mike Sell, you mentioned that Money in the Bank took Survivor Series spot as the big four in recent years. What should happen or what would you do to make Survivor Series get that reputation back? It's not going to. I mean, Money in the Bank replaced it, and so that's the big four. It's the big five if you expand it out to Survivor Series. And I think Triple H has already taken steps by doing the War Games matches. Yeah, I'm a big War Games fan. I was calling for it for years. We finally have it. And I think that's what needed to be done. But I don't think there's anything that they're going to do with Survivor Series that is going to make it leapfrog Money in the Bank. People love the Money in the Bank concept. I mean, I would give it a rest, but I know why they continue to do it. They're not going to stop doing it. People love it. I don't see Survivor Series, doing anything that's going to replace Money in the Bank in that spot. I think the Big Four is pretty solid at this point. A. Jackson, Swerve wins first and then Ospreay wins at Wembley. That sounds about right to me. I definitely think that's possible. Tanya, thank you for the $4.99. Very much appreciated. Oz and Glorious, a big Stephanie Vaquer fan, obviously. Drew Johnson with another $50 bomb. My God, Drew. Just seeing if you got it fixed. You're the GOAT, my friend. Drew, thank you. Yeah, I'll fix that hole. It was only yours, though, which is kind of interesting. So I wonder if it activated the talk to text only for 50 and above. Because I didn't hear her voice for any of the other ones. It was only your girl. She's yours. I didn't hear it for anybody else. The Juliet, Tony Khan donated his NFL draft neck brace to the NFL Network's Rich Eisen and donated $100,000 to St. Jude's as a result. I did mention that on Twitter. And St. Jude's is a great place for him to be supporting at that level. That money is going to go to a good cause, and I thought that was awesome. That was a very, very cool thing. Justin G, keep voice and Ed, slide in Shibata holding a phone. Josiah Ball, Solomonster is the greatest of all time. I don't know if I'd say that, but better you say it than me. See, if I say it, though, it makes me look like I have a big head. Drew Johnson with another $50 super chat. My goodness. I'm going to wear this button out with you. Solomonster takes out his trash on time. He opens doors for people, always pays his bills. He is a true American citizen who loves wrestling and loves HBK. If only Bret Hart could win this man over. Read that, computer. Acknowledge me. You have been acknowledged. Although she didn't read the very end of it because it was too freaking long. Bender McSimpson, what's going on, Bender? That Chris Jericho segment almost had me on a bender tonight. I love the Casino Gauntlet match. It's a great twist on an old idea. It's better than any Royal Rumble that I have seen in the last 10 years. I disagree. I would not go that far. The one tonight was exciting. See, the last one they did, I didn't think it was, it wasn't anything fantastic. This one was better. This one was more exciting. But better than any Royal Rumble in the last decade? No. No, I wouldn't go that far. Oz and Glorious, not going to lie, I absolutely love the Learning Tree. So you're the one. Well, I guess we just found the new member. We found the new disciple of Jericho here. When Jericho called everyone branches, I lost it. Giovanni Zarate. My God, Giovanni, I haven't mentioned that name in a while. Thank you for the 10. Do you think that AEW should turn the Casino Gauntlet match into a pay-per-view with the winner getting a shot at the title, similar to WWE's Royal Rumble? If Tony Khan was to add more shows in 2025, I think that it's something that he should consider. The casino thing, it's kind of tied into Double or Nothing. But he could do it, you know, if he was going to add more pay-per-views. And I don't know that he really needs to. I would rather there not be pay-per-views every month. I think 8 or 9 is perfectly fine. But, yeah, I think it's something that he would consider. But Giovanni, thank you, man. Noel Mulligan, how is it going, Sala Monster? It's going very well. I hope it's going well with you, too. Oz says, shout out to BlissFan, who 100% knows that Vakur is better than Alexa. The Mount Vernon Kid, Christopher Bennett, with the 5. What's up, Solo? Does Tony Khan got the guts to have Swerve go over Ospreay? Or is the clock ticking for Swerve's reign? I say no, he does not. I don't think Ospreay is winning at Forbidden Door. I don't think we're getting a title change. I like the idea that Jerome mentioned about Swerve having to win by nefarious means, and it leads to him going heel again, and you get 2 matches out of it instead of 1. And he holds on to it a little bit longer. Bender says, love the scapegoat bus, reminds me of Twisted Metal. Dark Effect with the $10 super chat. I always wanted a pair of the LA Gears myself, never could convince my parents to buy me a set though. Still a little salty, to be honest. I remember the pumps too, hashtag getting old. Yeah, but yet, what's old is new again. Doesn't it feel that way, that retro is like the in thing now? Bringing back the pumps, bringing back Beetlejuice and Beverly Hills Cop. You're always hearing about like retro stuff. You know why? Because the classics are the best, man. That's why. Classics are the best. That's why they always get brought back. Fabian Garcia, do you think with Ospreay and MJF, they have their Austin and Rock, or at least Cena and Batista, like 2 big names that could lead to a big clash somewhere down the line? Yeah, I mean, 2 big names that will eventually clash, but I don't look at them as Rock and Austin or... I mean, I know what you're saying, but, you know, when you mention those names, people start making comparisons. There is no comparison there. I look at it as Ospreay and MJF are the 2 top baby faces in all of AEW right now. Swerve is now number 3. With MJF's return and the reaction he got at Double or Nothing and the reactions that Ospreay's been getting, Swerve is now number 3. On the list of top baby faces. So MJF and Ospreay are basically 1 and 2 right now. In that respect, you could say that. But you got to be careful. Anybody who says Rock and Austin, people automatically are like, oh, are you comparing them to Rock and Austin? It's like, no. No. It's just an analogy. HBKC83, who is the greatest babyface manager of all time? I like how you had to specify babyface, because we already know who the greatest heel manager of all time is. Greatest babyface manager of all time, right? I don't want to say Oliver Humperdinck. Can't say that. Babyface manager. I don't know. Paul Bearer would be pretty high up on the list. You know, Paul Bearer and The Undertaker, they were such an iconic combo. Most of the great managers were heels. You know, I mean, the top managers of all time were all heels. Heenan, Heyman, Cornette. All heel. Jimmy Hart. Jimmy Hart was a babyface, but Jimmy Hart was best when he was a heel. You know, when he was a babyface with Hogan, like, not great. But when Jimmy was a heel and he was in Memphis and then he came up to WWE and he was with the Hearts and Honky Tonk Man and Greg Valentine and all these different people, that's when he was at his best. So it's actually a pretty tough question because you don't really think about babyface managers too often. But I think Paul Bearer would be pretty high up on the list. You know, Elizabeth is up there too, but it wasn't even anything that she herself did. You know, she stood there. But in that storyline, though, she was such an important part of that storyline. And such an important part of why Randy Savage got over in the way that he did. But what did she actually do? She didn't cut promos. She didn't physically get involved, typically. You know, very rarely. She pulled her skirt off that one time at SummerSlam and had everybody distracted. It's probably the only thing she ever really did. Well, actually, I take that back. I do take that back. SummerSlam 89 was probably her big moment. Because she tripped Sherry over the top rope near the end of the match. And then when the match was over, when she walloped her in the head with that loaded purse, that was a great moment. Tony Schiavone on commentary just totally lost his shit at that moment. Base Beerus, Tony Khan needs the inflatable hug tube guys like Bailey. Well, he won't need them if he's not on TV. Keep him off TV and he won't need them. He shouldn't be on TV. Dark Effect. Over 1,000 in here on a Wednesday. The sign of an enjoyable show and that you are killing it, Solo. Thanks for all you do, especially after such a wrestling-heavy week. I know that you are tired. Dark Effect, yes, I am very tired, but I am very happy that you are with me. It's been a very busy, very tiring weekend. Food Hive, you have 9 days. Matt Sydal, in 9 days! I knew that would get a reaction out of Food Hive. 9 days! 9 days! I'll never forget that segment. One of the more memorable segments from those pandemic shows. Of Tony Khan coming out and saying, in 9 days, you got 9 days! Who was he saying that to? It was Kenny Omega, right? I think it was Kenny Omega. Gold Matthew. What's up, Sal O the Monster? Hot take. Excuse me. The Devil storyline is the best whodunit of all time due to its logical conclusion. Do you agree? No. I didn't think it was anything like any kind of all-time great angle. No, I didn't see it that way. I'd have to think about other whodunit angles because there have been some bad ones over the years. I mean, maybe it wins by default. I'm trying to think of a great whodunit that had, like, this fantastic payoff. I'm drawing a blank. I didn't think this one was that great either, to be honest with you. Oz and Glorious Battle Royale is not better than the Gauntlet. Sorry, was on a dog walk. Okay. Thank you, Oz. Your dog or somebody else's? Maybe you're a dog walker. You see that in the city sometimes. People will walk other people's dogs. They'll have literally like 8 dogs on a leash. And these dogs are trying to run this way and that way and that way. And I'm like, it's like, I hope they're getting hazard pay. I could never do that. They would just piss me off. I would just let them go. Say, fuck it. Goodbye. Goodbye. You're not my problem anymore. It's probably why I don't have a dog. Base beer is Sexy Red and Shawn Michaels crossover before GTA 6. Oz and Glorious, Triple H called Vince McMahon the Learning Tree multiple times. Well, I guess they have something in common. Base beer is someone said Miss Elizabeth for Babyface Manager. Yes, we just talked about her. She's definitely in that conversation for sure. Oz and Glorious, Saraya's match in LA got cut, and she is liking anti-AEW posts tonight on X with her bio changed to I'ma head out. Yikes. Alright, so she's having a tantrum like a child. Her match was already announced for next week. Originally, they announced Mariah May and Saraya for the show tonight. It didn't happen tonight, so it's going to happen next week. It's already been announced. Not like they cut the match and, you know, said that, okay, well, we're just not going to do it. They're going to do it next week. So what's the problem? Base Beerus, Stacy Keibler, or Superheroes in Training? No. For a best babyface manager? No. Oz and Glorious, Our Dogs, We Rescue. Was correcting Battle Royal. Oh, that's very nice that you rescued. Yeah, I know people who foster kittens and stuff like that. Good people. Now, in all seriousness, though, if you are good to animals and you are good to pets, I think that's a reflection of the kind of human being that you are. I think some of the worst people on the planet are people who abuse pets. And you will hear stories in the news every now and then like that of a dog that got rescued and he was in rough shape because they found him in the street and some kids were like kicking him. And I mean, there have been some awful stories. There was a story about a cat. I don't even want to get into it. Something with firecrackers and stuff. It's just, I don't understand how people can do that to animals. And I think that, again, it says a lot about who they are as a human being when you hear stuff like that. So that's good, though. That's good that you're doing that. And Uffman, what would a conversation sound like between Tony Khan and John Laurinaitis? Well, it would probably sound like both of them, you know, smoke 20 packs a day. I mean, John Laurinaitis is like the easiest one to do. People power. All about people power. Excuse me. I have to get my towel. My towels are ready. My towels are in the dryer. I gotta put them down. So I have something to put my knees on for Vince McMahon. Then Tony Khan. The thing with Tony Khan that's weird is like he yells everything. He has to shout. He did that with Martha Hart on Sunday on the pre-show. When he was making the announcement, it's like the way he will enunciate certain things and just shout it. It's like, dude, just speak like a normal person. I see you doing media interviews. He was on the Rich Eisen show. We just talked about that. He donated $100,000 to St. Jude. And it wasn't like he was sitting there just shouting. It's like he's not a performer. And so I don't know if it's nerves or he's trying to portray a character, but he goes out there and he just shouts. And that's why I said Christopher Daniels being his surrogate on TV, it could be anybody, honestly. It's not that Christopher Daniels is some kind of great promo. I mean, he fucked up Rampage and called it Dynamite. But he's perfectly acceptable in that position. You could put almost anybody out there, and I think it would be better than Tony Khan. It's just very weird. You know, he's trying too hard. He's very awkward. Johnny Ace's voice sounds like Super Dave. Yeah, well, except Super Dave was a good person. And not a piece of shit. That's the difference. So, of course, the good person is no longer with us and the piece of shit is still with us. So, that's the way it works in life, unfortunately. Base Beerus, Piomai is technically a racing queen. Oh, Piomai. Piomai. Well, it's like I said, you know, the way you treat animals is a reflection, and that said a lot about Ralph Cifaretto. What happened to poor Piomai? And Green, 49285, wheelchair Kurt Angle as best babyface manager when he was on SmackDown. Wheelchair Kurt Angle? Was he a babyface when he was doing that? I don't remember. I don't remember what he was doing at that time. Thank you for the super chat, love. I appreciate it very much. And we are up to 460 likes here on the video. So your likes do help the video out quite a bit to get it out more so that more people will see the video in their recommended. That's why I mention it every week. So thank you for that. Hey, Funky Weapon, what a moronic way for Edge to get injured. Yes, it was very dumb. It was very, very dumb. And Isaac, what was your pet cat like? She was afraid of people that she didn't know. So if the bell rang, like the doorbell rang, forget it. She'd be gone. She'd go under a bed. You wouldn't see her for a day. So she wasn't exactly a very people-friendly if she didn't know who you were. It was funny, actually, because the cable guy, when I still had cable, came in one day to try to fix or do something with one of the boxes. And she didn't realize that he was here. I don't even know how she didn't realize it. And he comes into the back bedroom, and he's trying to fix the cable box. And that's where the cat was. And the cat was on the bed. And the cat's looking at me, has no idea that this guy is behind her. And then as he starts fumbling around and making noise, like the ears go up and she realizes, and when she turns around, there's this moment of panic where she's like surveying, like, wait, I don't know who you are. And then he turns around and she looks at him, and I've never seen this animal move so fast in my life. Like a bolt of lightning. I don't think I found her for another 2 days. I don't know where she was. I don't know what hole she crawled into. I didn't see her for a good 2 days after that. But she was fun. It was a domestic short-haired tabby. And I miss her. I miss her. Oz and Glorious, a psychologist friend of mine who loves AEW is 100% convinced that Tony Khan has Asperger's or is on the spectrum, which explains his on-camera and scrum reactions. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to diagnose him. He could just be socially awkward. You know, I don't know. I'm not a doctor like he is, so I'm not going to diagnose. He's just a weird guy. He's a nice guy. He seems like a good guy, but just a weird guy. And it's better to have somebody else on television making the decisions for him. It could be fun to see him go out there comically bad and then come on here and kind of laugh at it, but I just don't think it makes for good television. Some people just are not meant to be television performers. I'm sure that most bookers and promoters, you know, secretly at least, they want that. They want to be on TV. They want to be part of the show. They want to be a bad guy or they want to take a bump. And he did. Yeah, he's always wanted to do that. So he, when he was upside down and he was, you know, being 69 there by Matt Jackson, he was having the time of his life. He was enjoying himself. Then he got dropped on his head. And hey, he got dropped on his head and St. Jude ended up getting $100,000 for it. So at least something good came out of it. All right, let's go ahead and be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Here we go. Hey, Maze the Great, what's going on, Maze? Maze the Great, was my father ever on the podcast back in the day? No. Although you can hear his voice in the intro to the podcast every week. I had my mom on for Mother's Day. That was the year before she less than a year before she passed away. But my father was never on the show. All right, tag team Be the Booker. Let's see here. Kane and Mankind. Look at that. The former WWE tag team champions. Kane and Mankind. Starting us off here. And it will be Kane and Mankind taking on the Outsiders, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. There you go. Four of the big names from that Monday Night War period. Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, Kane, and Mick Foley. Foley was ended up being a very big part of that Monday Night War period, as it turned out. But Scott Hall is the one who kicked it all off. As soon as Scott Hall walked out on Nitro. And that was May 27th of 1996. So, almost to the day, all those many years ago, wrestling changed forever. Women's Be the Booker, we land on Mariah May. This is from her stardom days. There she is, the queen herself. We all bow down to Mariah May. Your Owen Hart Foundation Tournament winner for 2024. Mariah May going to go one-on-one with, oh no, All Red Everything. Eva Marie. Who's worse? Which All Red is worse? Eva Marie or Sexy Red? I heard some of Sexy Red's music, and I fail to see how she has 1.4 million followers on Twitter. Am I missing something here? Or is it just the fact that she shakes her ass when she comes out? And so you'll have 1.4 million guys simping over her. Or pretty much anybody who goes out and shakes their ass. I bet if I went out there and shook my ass like that, I wouldn't have 1.4 million subscribers or followers. And I'm not going to do that, so you don't have to worry about that. Men's Be the Booker. Main event time. All right. We begin with Bron Breakker, who has quickly become one of the must-see parts of Monday Night Raw in a very short period of time. They have utilized him so far in a very just genius fashion to where I think he's already someone who people look at and they know, okay, this guy is special. When this guy's on screen and his intensity. I don't know if you saw the video. Did you see the video of him? It was fan video from the arena on Monday night when he came out to interfere in the Ricochet Ilya Dragunov match. It showed him coming out from like one of the tunnels. He was like spider walking on the floor. He was like dragging himself along the floor, like Randy Orton slithering like a viper, waiting. And the fans are like, they're sitting there watching the match and they just like kind of look over. They're like, oh shit. And then you see in the background, Ricochet hits the 450 and then he just explodes and he just runs and charges, jumps over the barricade into the ring. I mean, the time it took for him to go from the crowd to the ring, I mean, the way he sprinted in there, it kind of reminds me of Brock Lesnar, because you look at Brock and you don't expect him to be that fast, but he is. And it's like, oh my God, what's scarier than Brock Lesnar? Brock Lesnar running after you. That's what's scarier. That's what Bron Breakker reminds me of. That's right. He looked like an apex predator. That's right. Bron Breakker is going to be in many main events in his career, so why not start him out here? Let's get a drum roll going. Bron Breakker, who is his opponent going to be? Let's find out. Bron Breakker against Hollywood Hulk Hogan. The son of Rick Steiner, the nephew of Scott Steiner, who was once a member of the New World Order. Getting into the ring with Hollywood Hulk Hogan, one of the biggest stars of all time. That, my friends, is a main event. And see, if I had the power to book that match, it would go more or less the same way that the Brock Lesnar Hulk Hogan match did. on SmackDown back in 2002, where he would murder this man. And I would put Bron Breakker over. That's how that would go down. Hey, Mihan with the $2. Do you remember the I still remember note that Booker T got? I don't. No, I don't remember that. You know, that reminds me. I saw there was an interview with Jennifer Love Hewitt, and she mentioned, I guess they're doing, is it a sequel? I don't think it's a reboot. I think it's a sequel of I Know What You Did Last Summer. Apparently they're working on that. There's something in the works. I mean, I guess the Scream movies still do well, so why not? But do we really need a sequel to I Know What You Did Last Summer? She was definitely one of my crushes back in the day, that's for sure. So thank you guys for the support. If you missed it, there's no shortage of content on the channel to go back and check out. The King and Queen of the Ring review from Saturday, Double or Nothing review from... well, I guess it was Monday afternoon. The Raw review from Monday night. Of course, if you missed it, I was live with JD for Tuesday Night Titans over on his channel 3 hours last night, talking a whole bunch of different topics. And we got one last stream here for the month of May, and then that's it. So I want to end May in the strongest possible way. So join me on Friday night right here on the channel. Bring your questions and your likes and your super chats and whatever else, and let's send May out with a bang, because we'll be talking SmackDown coming out of King and Queen of the Ring. We'll see what they do on Friday night. We'll see what happens with the AJ Styles storyline, with AJ Styles and Nick Aldis. I know what you were watching last Monday. You know what I'm watching every Monday and Wednesday and Friday. Very predictable. Devin from New Jersey, DeSolo agree with Freddie Prinze Jr. that it is up to the talent to get themselves over. I think the talent has to get themselves over, but I also think that the promoters can be a detriment to that sometimes, and they also bear responsibility in that. It goes both ways. You can't just be on the wrestler. The wrestler does not have full autonomy to go out there and do whatever they want. So, yes, I mean, you have to get yourself over, but you also need the company to nurture and support that and promote that. You can get yourself over on social media, cutting promos, and then get jobbed out on TV. So it goes both ways. I don't think it's an all or nothing situation. That's right, Freddie Prinze, and speaking of which, that's right, Freddie Prinze Jr. was in I Know What You Did Last Summer. Look at the timing of that. Timing of that super chat. That was perfect. But yeah, he is starting his own promotion very soon. We'll see how that turns out. Yeah, Wardlow got over. See, it's a good point there by Bash. Wardlow got himself over. He got over pretty good. How'd that turn out for him? Tell that to Freddie Prinze Jr. I'll see you guys on Friday night for the SmackDown review. Till then, take care, guys.